It's half past eight. Half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, you are invited by Lucky Strike to attend its inquisitorial free-for-all. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. If duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, whatever happens on Information Please is completely unpremeditated. The questions are never seen in advance by any of the experts. And tonight, our experts include the terrific trio, Oscar Levant, pianist, composer, author, actor, Franklin P. Adams, verse writer and conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, John Kieran, sports expert and author of John Kieran's Nature Notes, and our guest you've met before on the screen, where she's often appeared with her famous husband, Charles Lawton. She's Elsa Lanchester, at present starring on Broadway in the play They Walk Alone. Now, before we start this evening, Information Please wishes to correct itself. Last week, I credited the Manx cat, who apparently has many friends, with only three vertebrae. And Mr. Kieran was polite but incredulous, and as always, he was right. Now, what I meant to say was that the Manx cat has three vertebrae in its rudimentary tail, and of course has any number of vertebrae in the rest of it. If there are any Manx cats listening in, our humblest apologies. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We'll start the festivities this evening with a question coming from Lella Lawrence of this city. In what connection have you seen these words in print? Get three out of four. Here are the words. Toto, Poco Poco, Hunka Munka, and Sen Sen. The first is Toto. T-O-T-O, Mr. Levant.
There was a clown called Toto.
There was a clown called Toto, but more recently you've seen the word in print, Mr. Kieran.
That's the female gorilla in the Ringling Circus.
Yes, who is has been mated to Gargantua.
Reluctantly.
Successfully. That's right. Now, if you saw the phrase Poco Poco anywhere, what would it mean to you? Poco Poco. Mr. Levant again.
It's either a resort or it has something to do with one of those dynamic... what is Mr. Icky's control? Do you know those big...
Interior?
No. The dam things. Those dam...
Yeah, be careful.
No, like Roosevelt
the, oh, like the Grand Coulee.
Yeah.
Poco Poco?
Well, then let's settle for a resort.
No, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, Mr. Levant, it's a term you've often seen in reading sheet music. Mr. Kieran.
It means little by little.
Yes.
Oh, I know that.
Get it now, Mr. Levant? Mr. Kieran, what does it mean in music?
Same thing.
Same thing. Little by little, I suppose. What, gradually, Mr. Levant?
Gradual.
Good enough. All right, you prefer the adjective. Hunka Munka, H-U-N-C-A-M-U-N-C-A. I'll give a quarter to anybody who knows that. Among the four of you, I mean. Hunka Munka. Any ideas, Miss Lanchester?
It's the name of a princess in a play.
Is what that play?
A Tom Thumb.
Right. Right, it's the daughter of King Arthur and the wife of Tom Thumb in Fielding's play. I owe you a quarter, and you will get it if you'll wait just a minute after the performance. Very willingly lost. Sen Sen, sometimes spelt T-S-E-N, and sometimes spelt S-E-N if you're economical. Sen Sen, Mr. Levant.
Well, there's a bad breath remover called Sen.
That's right. Exactly what I mean. It's a scent used for sweetening the breath. That's quite right. And that gives us four out of four. And sends us on to this question from Emma Stoltzberg of this city. Get two out of three. In what literary or dramatic work did these ships have a prominent part? And here are three. The first is the Jolly Roger. The Jolly Roger. The name of a ship in what literary work? Of course, it is the sign of the
Pirate.
Mr. Adams, Mr. Kieran, what would you guess it to be?
Is that Gilbert and Sol?
No, not Gilbert and Sol. It's the pirate ship in Peter Pan, James Barry's Peter Pan. Mr. Lanchester, do you remember that?
course it is.
I saw it dawning in your eye. I should
I
have
know.
Waited. That gives us one wrong. Have to get the next two right. The ship, the good ship Cotton Blossom. Mr. Adams.
That is in, that is the ship of Showboat.
You bet. In Edna Ferber's book. That's quite right. And the ship Pandora. Pandora. Pandora? Well.
S.S. Pandora?
Yes. I don't know what its initials were. Miss Lanchester.
It's Captain Bligh when he went on his second trip, wasn't it?
Yes, in search of Fletcher somebody.
In search of Fletcher.
Christian, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It's from Mutiny on the Bounty. That's very good, Miss Lanchester.
Well, I ought to know it, oughtn't I?
You ought to know it, with Mr. Lawton having appeared as Captain
Bligh.
Are
you a castaway in that picture?
Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 and sends us safely on to another question coming from Mrs. Henry Howard of Los Angeles. Get 2 out of 3 again. Now, I'm going to give you the last word of each of several lines of the chorus of an old song. That is, the rhyme words at the ends of the lines. Sing or quote the complete set of lines. Here's the first set of end rhyme words. Allow, now, dear, here. All you have to do is give me what comes before.
How's that go again?
Allow, Mr. Adams, now, dear, here. How's that giant brain, Mr. Adams?
I think that's the chorus of My Mother Was a Lady.
It is. Can you give it to us?
And you may have a sister.
Yes, you're beginning in medias res. Would you begin with My Mother Was a Lady and make it respectable?
My mother was a lady like yours, you will allow.
Can you help him out, Miss Lanchester?
And you may have a sister who needs a protection now. I've come to this great city to find a brother dear. And you wouldn't dare insult me, sir, if Jack were only here.
Oh, that's perfect. Perfect. I wonder whether you can do as well on this one. This is harder. Here are the rhyme words at the ends of the lines. Same, shy, alack, back, I. There are 5. Miss Lanchester.
Oh, Jane doesn't look.
You're right.
Same. When she left the village, she was shy.
Can you sing it for us? You don't really think you do as well as Mr. Adams at the pass.
But alas and alack.
Well, you may do it together, you know.
Oh, Jane doesn't look the same. When she left the village, she was shy. But alas and alack, she came back with a naughty little twinkle in her eye.
There you go.
There was a parody that ended, and the golden hair was hanging up to dry.
Is that a parody of it? How does the parody go?
And the golden hair was hanging up to dry.
That's all you're going to tell me, you mean? All right. Miss Lanchester, you and Mr. Adams make a very nice team. Oscar, you must get Balaban and Tats after you sometime. Here's another set of rhyme words. Be, I'm not stuttering, and fair. In other words, the end words of the first three lines are be, and then fair.
To be or not to be, fair.
It's a steal. How about it? Well, here's the way this one goes. Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Remember that now, Miss Lanchester?
Yes.
Can you go on with it?
Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Oh, dear, what can the matter be? Johnny, so long at the fair.
That's very
pretty. But I didn't think of that fair.
I know. Well, we don't give you credit for it. We have 2 out of 3 on it. That's you, Mr. Adams and Miss Lanchester. Now, how about this one? It comes from Mrs. Walter F. Stauffacher of Monroe, Wisconsin. Again, get 2 out of 3 if you can. As you know, the well-known screen actress, Bette Davis, seems to thrive on tragic roles. What was her misfortune in the following motion pictures? And the first one was Juarez, or Juarez, if you will, Mr. Levant.
Well, as Maximilian's wife, whose destiny, I think, was guided by Napoleon III in Paris, then he was ratted on by same, she went to France to intercept or to plead for some protection. While there, he kind of took care of her, so she went quickly crazy.
That's right. What a nice plot sense you have. That's right. She went mad.
Great saving of time not to go to a movie to listen to that boy.
Only good on Friday nights, though, Frank.
I want to correct Mr. Adams' snobism. That was a very excellent play by Werfel.
I'm sure
Juarez
it was.
And Maximilian.
Yes, that's quite right. Who, in the screenplay Dark Victory, what happened to Miss Davis? Anything dreadful happened to her, Miss Lanchester?
Went blind, didn't she?
Yes, as a result of what?
I didn't see it. I just read the review.
You're just guessing that's what happened
to her?
Mr. Levant.
She had a brain tumor, which ain't funny, McGee.
No, it isn't so funny. Except it was just on the screen, you know, Mr. Levant. Don't get worried. And how about the screenplay Dangerous? The screenplay Dangerous, what happened to her there? Now, we've got her mad, we've got her blind.
Will she be offended if I miss that one?
We got two out of three. Let's give her a break. In Dangerous...
You're probably home that night.
All that happened to Miss Davis in... All that happened to Miss Davis in Dangerous was that she was a dipsomaniac.
Well, that's fun if you can afford it.
A drunk to you, Mr. Levant. That's two out of three, which, again, is sufficient for our purposes. Now, how about this one? This comes from Jane King of this city. I'm going to give you three different arithmetical operations. Tell me what happens as a result of them. Explain what you get when you divide the mental age by the chronological age. You get a result, of course, and what's that result called?
PQ. IP. PQ.
Well, let's pick out another set of initials, and you're all right, Mr. Levant.
IQ.
IQ,
yeah.
What does IQ mean, Mr. Adams?
Intelligence quotient.
The intelligence quotient, that's right. Did any of you, Miss Lanchester and gentlemen, ever take one of those tests?
They don't know where I live, I hope.
That was after my time, thank heaven.
Mr. Kieran, did you ever take an IQ test?
Never did.
It'd be very interesting if you
could
take it.
Qualify.
I bet you could do all right on it. Now, suppose you divided the numerator by the denominator and multiplied by 100. What do you get?
You know the government something.
What do you get when you do that? You divide the numerator by the denominator and multiply by 100, and what you get is called what?
100 times the denominator.
Well, you get what's called percentage, Mr. Adams. Get a
Not
percent.
Necessarily.
Oh, yes, you do. You try it sometime in the still of the night and see whether you don't get a percentage. Now, suppose you multiply the diameter by pi, spelled E-I. Mm-hmm. What do you get, Mr. Kieran?
You get the area of a circle.
Take it easy.
The circumference.
Ah, yes.
Pardon me.
The circumference of the circle. How would you get the area?
Oh, that's a tough operation. I don't want to go into it.
I don't think it's very hard, Mr. Adams.
You would multiply pi by the square of the radius.
Yes, it's very simple. Pi r squared, Mr. Kieran, that's all.
Well, it'll run out, depends on how fine you want it. It'll run out to about 34 decimal places.
Oh, you mean to get the value of pi?
Mm-hmm.
We usually work with how many places?
314-1739 and so on, I think.
14159, I think.
159.
There was a man, by the way, who actually worked it out to several thousand decimal places and died loony. he really did. You can find out all about it in the textbooks. Well, that gives us two out of three. How about this one? From Anne Kraft of Dallas, Texas. In what play or movie do these visits occur? Get three out of four. Now, in the first case, a dustman, that would be garbage man in our language, drops in on the home of a professor and strikes a bargain. Miss Lanchester?
Pygmalion.
Pygmalion, yes, that's mm-hmm. quite right. What was the bargain about, Miss Lanchester, do you remember?
I do.
Mr. Levant.
About, yeah.
Well, do you want to take it, Miss Lanchester?
No, you do it.
Well,
how nice you both are.
Professor Higgins was kind of, he wanted to make a deal so that he could reorient the sounds of her voice so that she would be considered cultured.
Right.
And he made a deal with her father. Liza Throttle Bottom. What was
her name?
Doolittle. Easily confused with Throttle Bottom. That's very good, Mr. LeBaron. Now, how about this one? Another visit, unexpected visit. An iceman drops in to deliver ice. Fooled you that time, Mr. LeBaron. And stays for 8 years.
Oh.
And stays for 8 years. Where, Mr. Levant?
You can't take it with you.
That's right, yes.
He becomes... Is he the inventor of the firecracker, man?
I've forgotten. Do you remember Miss Lanchester?
No.
I think he's the man that washes the windows.
No,
that's a different
one. No, he's not a window washer.
That's
How about this one?
Joan Moon.
A poet crashes the room of an invalid and acquires a wife. Where would you find that? Miss Lanchester.
Elizabeth Barrett's room, again.
Yes, who is it that does the
Robert
crashing?
Robert Browning.
Robert Browning, the poet, and gets Elizabeth Barrett as a result.
Mr. Levant.
I would be wrong, but interestingly wrong, if I said Marchbanks in Canada, which is completely incorrect.
You'd be all right, except for the fact that it's not an invalid, and he doesn't get it.
Get it.
Yeah, otherwise, it's right. Boy, don't
How
you and I
arms
like
arms in the man? Isn't there something like
pardon?
That in arms in the man?
I don't think there's an invalid there. It's a soldier that enters in arms in the man. And I don't know whether he gets the girl
He's
or not.
Invalid when he gets in.
I've forgotten the plot.
Her resistance is low, that's all.
Now, in this case, Miss Lanchester and gentlemen, a vagrant visits a schoolhouse and disrupts the class. Mr. Adams.
That was Mary's Lamb.
Yes, Mary's Lamb would be a very good response. There's another one. Miss Lanchester, can you recollect?
I was in a film called The Beachcomber.
It was in a film called The Beachcomber.
Took one of the young girls away.
That's right. You say that very gently. he disrupted the teaching which was done by yourself in that
right.
film. Is that right? Well, now let's see where we are. So
it?
Far, we have lost exactly nothing and given out no sets of the encyclopedia. Now Mr. Cross covers a lot of territory as he brings us reports from the tobacco market.
Yes, Mr. Fadiman, my reports take us as far south as Florida and as far west as Tennessee. They show that all over tobacco land, the American Tobacco Company pays higher prices and gets the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. For example, at Morristown, Tennessee, during the past season, the American Tobacco Company paid 33% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 33% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. At Valdosta, Georgia, American paid 41% more. At Lake City, Florida, 46% more. At Wilson, North Carolina, 53% more. And so it goes at market after market all over tobacco land. Lucky Strike consistently pays higher prices and gets the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Have you tried a Lucky lately?
Mr. Cross, you covered tobacco land in just 60 seconds by my watch. And now suppose we go on with a question from C.W. Halleck of Denver, Colorado. Can you recite lines of poetry, let's say from three different sources, about a fool or fools? We're very near to April Fool's Day and we want to be timely. Mr. Kieran.
A fool there was, and he made his prayer to a rag and a bone and a hank of hair right out of Oscar's mouth.
Right out of my head.
That's a very good one. Now, Mr. Levant, did you have another one?
You know that's all I know about a fool.
All right, then you just sit on your laurels. Mr. Adams.
I met a fool in the forest.
Ah, very good. Oh. Yes, what's it from?
As you like it.
As you like it. Thank you, Miss Lanchester and Mr. Adams.
What about Fool's Paradise? What comes from there?
Just Fool's Paradise, just a phrase.
Romeo and Juliet.
Is it from Romeo and Juliet? Well, then Mr. Levant is right, isn't he?
If he recites Romeo and Juliet,
he will
save
me credit. Miss Lanchester, did you have another one for us about fools or a fool? It doesn't have to be poetry. It can be a proverb or a famous line of prose, perhaps. We have three. Any ideas, Mr. Kieran?
Well, there's the word fool in Locksley Hall. Fool, again the vision, again the something wild. I'm sorry, I can't give the full quotation.
Oh, well,
quotation,
that's fool.
There's no fool like an old fool.
Yes, that's no fool like
there.
An old fool. That's two fools. Yes, a double fool. Mr. Levant.
Mine's no good. It was paid in full.
All right, I'll take it. That sends us on to this question from Ruth K. Friedlich of New York City. This is a musical question, Miss Lanchester and gentlemen. What ballet is usually associated with this familiar work, part of which is now going to be played? We have to get two out of three if we can. Here's the first. We have one hand, Mr. Levant's hand.
That's Imitation to the Waltz by von Weber, and it's in a ballet called The Spectre and sometimes Billy Rose. The Spectre and the Rose. It's a duet. It's supposed to be of the old school.
Spectre de la Rose, and who's famous for having appeared?
Well, all solo dancers, Nijinsky.
Nijinsky is the most famous.
That's
name,
the fat part.
Very good. And now the second. Is that familiar to anyone but to Mr. Levant? It's very familiar. Mr. Kieran, do you recognize the melody at all, Mr. Levant?
I'll help. It's a Chopin A-flat waltz, and I guess it must be in Les Sylphides, but I thought it was a C-sharp minor waltz.
This is the one I have down on the card. You're right so far. Don't contradict me.
I know it's A-flat.
Yes, the A-flat waltz apparently is used in Les Sylphides, the famous ballet.
Well, that's a Chopiniana anyway, yes.
Now the third and last. By golly, it's a new hand. Mr. Adams.
That is the ballet music from Sylvia.
Very good. What's it called and who wrote it?
I think it's called a pizzicato or something.
That's right. Very good. And who wrote it, Mr. Adams?
Leo's his first name.
I don't know.
Well, you did very well.
John knows.
Mr. Kieran.
Daleeb.
Very good. Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, would you care to change seats with Mr. Levant? Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Thank you very much. How about this one? We'll go from music to painting, shall we? This comes from Mary E. Titus of this city. Again, a 2 out of 3 question. What painting is said to have caused the artist to lie on his back for about 4 years? What painting is said to have caused that situation? Miss Lanchester.
In the Sistine Chapel.
Yes. The paintings on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. Who painted them?
Leonardo.
Yes, and who? I beg your pardon?
Leonardo.
No. It's the other one that we all
know. Michelangelo.
Michelangelo, yes. Michelangelo. And why did he lie on his back as he did the painting? Well, why did he do that? Would he choose to do it?
No.
No.
Kieran?
Why,
he wasn't a contortionist.
There was a scaffold built up there with horizontal planks so that the ceiling was then within reach of his paintbrush.
Yes, I suppose it was so curved that you couldn't paint it in any other position. Now, what painting is said to have caused the artist to go into bankruptcy?
The painting itself?
The painting itself, yes. Trick question. It's not easy.
Is it one of those Rivera paintings?
No, it is not. But it's a painting done by a man whose name begins with the same letter as Rivera.
Really?
Yeah, I'll give you a hint. The letters are
Rembrandt.
Now, and what is the painting?
I have no idea, but it's the only other R I know.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. I think I'll have to supply the information myself. Rembrandt, among other paintings, did one called The Night Watch. A number of citizens of his native town were in it, and he put so many faces in shadow, and his subjects was generally so displeased with the way he painted it that, as a result, he lost a lot of his clients and went into bankruptcy. Did you know
Martin
that?
Did that in a picture called Rembrandt, which was very good.
Oh, you should have remembered that, Mr. Levant.
Miss Lanchester should have remembered it.
Now, we have to get the next one or fail. What painting is said to have caused the king of one country to take a bride from another country? Said to have caused the king of one country to take a bride from another country. Mr. Kieran.
Would that have been a Holbein portrait?
Yes, it was. Yeah. And of whom?
It was Henry VIII. Mm-hmm.
Well, the painting was not of Henry
VIII. It was of...
Remember now, Miss Lanchester?
Anne of Cleves, was it?
Yes.
Yes.
How do you know, Miss Lanchester?
Well, I played the part.
Ah, yes. You see, all you have to get is a hint from Mr. Kieran, and you remember your whole past. And in the story, do you remember, Mr. Kieran, was he satisfied with the painting?
He asked who put that, who inveigled him into marrying that Flemish horse.
Yes, be careful, Mr. Kieran.
Flanders mare.
Well, Flanders mare, Flemish horse, it's rather close.
Yes. Now, Miss Lanchester, you'll find Mr. Kieran outside of this program one of the most charming and courteous of men. That's right. That gives us 2 out of 3. Herbert Rosen of Oil City, Pennsylvania, sends this one in. It's a question about disappearances. Get 2 out of 3. In what work of fiction does each of these disappearances occur? In the first case, a police inspector disappears into a river. Mr. Kieran.
Les Miserables.
Does the disappearing?
Javert.
Javert, as Miss Lanchester reminds us. And into what river, Miss Lanchester?
In the Seine.
Into the Seine, yes. Why does he do that, Miss Lanchester?
Because he's pursued up to that point by his own conscience, I should say. I mean, it's rather a long business to account for in a few words, isn't
it? Well, I think you've accounted for it very well, Mr. Kieran.
Because he let Jean Valjean go, and he felt that in doing so, he had failed as a police officer, and the only way out was to kill himself.
Yes, and of course it also provides a very good ending for the play. In the next case, a baby left in a handbag disappears from a railroad station. A baby left in a handbag disappears from a railroad station.
Sounds like Mickey Rooney can only do that.
Miss Lanchester.
The importance of being earnest.
Very good, Miss Lanchester. Yes. It's pretty hard to give the whole plot out, but you needn't try.
Yes.
But that's the answer. In Wilde's play, The Importance of
Waterloo
Being Earnest.
Waterloo Station or something.
That's right.
Ernest was left in the bag. Wasn't
Very
he?
Good,
yes.
Miss Fantasy. You've got it quite right. Now, how about this one? A baker goes on a cruise and vanishes. A baker goes on a cruise and vanishes. Any ideas? Not easy. It's from Lewis Carroll's The Hunting of the Snark. Remember it now, Mr. Adams? Why did he vanish? Do you remember?
I don't know. The snark was a boojum.
That's right. That's right. That's perfectly right. I wish you'd said that before. That gets us 2 out of 3. Robert S. Groom of Chicago sends this one in. On what musical instrument are the following things done? Get 2 out of 3. The first is smearing. Smearing.
A smear?
Yes.
They even do that on a trombone.
On a trombone. What is it?
It's a glissando, a slide, with a crescendo, then a decrescendo.
I still don't know.
Well, I have it in a piece of mine, but nobody likes the piece, so I can never hear it either.
Well, that's tough.
That's pretty indefinite.
How about...
I can sing it, though.
How about fluttering? Fluttering. Yes, Mr. Levant.
Well, you mean fluttering or a fluttered tongue? Which?
Fluttering says here.
Well, on either two instruments, on a trumpet. You can do it on a flute, too, strangely enough.
Yes, on a flute or on a trumpet. Now, how about slap-tonguing, whatever that is? Slap-tonguing.
Well, that's on a sax.
On a what?
Saxophone.
You sure?
A cornet.
You sure, Mr. Adams?
No.
Slap-tonguing?
Slap-tonguing, yes.
Why don't I know that?
I've got one vote for cornet and one vote for sax.
Not cornet. That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, Mr. Adams.
I still think it's a cornet.
It ends with et, Mr. Adams.
Clarinet.
Clarinet. Yes, clarinet's the answer. Well, I think that's about all we'll have time for. And now, here's Mr. Cross with proof that those tobacco markets we heard about a few minutes ago are typical.
You recall that the American Tobacco Company, to get finer, lighter, milder tobaccos, paid 33% more than the market average at Morristown, Tennessee, 41% more at Valdosta, Georgia, 46% more at Lake City, Florida, 53% more at Wilson, North Carolina. Now, just to show you how typical those markets are, I have here reports from a total of 119 different tobacco markets. Markets that handle 96% of all the cigarette tobacco sold at auction in this country. And at every one of these markets, Lucky Strike last season paid higher prices and got the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. Perhaps that helps you understand why the independent tobacco experts choose Lucky's for their own cigarette by such an overwhelming majority. Those buyers, auctioneers, and warehousemen see Lucky's pay higher prices for lighter, milder leaf. And so, with these independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. We take a very special pleasure tonight in announcing that, I think for the fourth time in our venerable history, we have lost exactly nothing and paid out no sets of the encyclopedia with the very able help of Miss Lanchester, whom we thank for attending our party this evening. Next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will be on hand, and as our guests, we welcome the world-famous foreign correspondent, John Gunther, who has just recently returned from South America, and Lyman Bryson, well-known moderator of the radio program The People's Platform and professor of adult education at Columbia University. Now, remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, we shall have a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.